Welcome to The Better Picture, your photography talk show where we get close, stay focused, and keep shooting. Today, in addition to our smartphone minute and Molly's Instagram minute and our techno tip, we bring you two artists who use the camera to push your ideas of what photography is and what it can be. Our guests today are Michael and Leslie Elliott-Smith, award-winning artists residing in Alexandria but with a national following. They successfully deal in montages of photos in a very surrealistic vein to create jaw-dropping art. As we jump into the conversation, I'm going to suggest that if you're not driving, that you take a moment and go to the webpage at thebetterpicture.org and click on the March 22 tab to get a view of their work. It will enhance the conversation we're about to have and may prompt a question or two. As always, we're here to answer any question about photography, prints, exhibits, etc. Anything you may have, all you have to do is call in at 800-552-8502. So let's get to our guests. Leslie and Michael, welcome to The Better Picture.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're glad to be here to talk about our artwork.
Well, I appreciate y'all being here, driving up from Alexandria. That shows you the commitment that they have. Tonight, for our listeners' sake, I'm going to give them a little outline. We're going to discuss what the life of a living artist is, people committed to full-time art, how living under the same roof affects y'all, how photography plays into your approach to art, and then talk about some of your shows and awards. But to begin with, what's a day in the life like around the Elliott-Smith household?
Well, I recently retired, and Michael's been retired for quite some time, so actually I have a lot of time to think about what I want to do every single day, which is really nice. So I can work on art, or go out and work in the garden, or we can travel.
Well, for those of you who have not been to their house, and I've had the pleasure of being there, when Leslie talks about working in the garden, it's approaching truck farm size. I mean, it's a serious outlet that we have. But surely, I mean, you're both working full-time as artists.
Yes. Right. I mean, I've had a studio in the house ever since we've had this particular house. I've had a studio in every house I've lived in, so when I wasn't doing photography, I was doing painting or printmaking or pottery or weaving, whatever interested me.
And, Michael, you predominantly stay within the photographic realm.
Right, exactly.
And you have a studio as well?
Yeah, I can say that. It's my computer set up in a room.
Right. Well, I mean, but the two of you have
separate places.
Separate places, right, in the same house. We already have a call in from Greg in Longview. Greg, you're on the air?
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask a question about outdoor photography.
Okay.
Mostly using my smartphone and using a pair of binoculars to catch pictures of birds and other wildlife. Is there a suggestion to be made for a Samsung phone if they make any sort of adapter, so I'm not using just binoculars?
Yeah, it's hard in doing wildlife photography. I mean, I'll just be honest with you up front. The phones are designed with a wider angle than most, and so you can try with the binoculars and stuff. I've read about it, I've not used them. There are some new clip-on lenses that I've had some friends send me some pictures they've taken that are pretty good. You're never going to get National Geographic with that, you know, picture that's got you're looking through a $6,000, $10,000 lens. But there are some adapters that you can put on. And you also have now pretty good resolution in the smartphones. So if you can get fairly close and get a picture, you can enlarge some. My advice is don't zoom in on the phone. Take the picture and zoom in later on the computer, because when you do that little pinch spread to zoom, you're really just using a small part of the sensor. But go try some of the things. Get on the internet and talk about smartphone lenses. Google that, and you'll get some ideas. Michael, Leslie, have y'all?
No,
we use.
If you look, go look at their pictures. There are birds and stuff in there, but they weren't taken with smartphones.
No, I'll shoot wide angle.
Right. So it's
telephoto lens.
Right. Yeah. Remember that the smartphone is not designed for wildlife. It's a compromise to catch everything else, so good luck with that. Appreciate the call in. Back to working together. You have separate studios in the house.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah. Do you have any slop over between your work? Do you critique? Do you suggest? Do you work?
Well, you know, we're in the same house, so when Michael's working on a piece and I happen to walk by his computer and see something, I might say something, but I don't always say something because we don't always agree. You know, we're not going to criticize each other's work, basically. But we are in the same house, and when he finishes a piece, it gets hung up on the wall or it gets put someplace where we can see it, and the same with me, so we see each other's work all the time.
I think the most help we give each other is really Photoshop tips that we learn as we're going through looking at tutorials and things like that. And even though we've been doing Photoshop a long time, there's just so much to learn.
Oh, so you say this is a great way to do this right. particular feature.
Right.
Do you ever come to the other and say,
how do you do this?
How do I make this yes. work?
Yes, absolutely. You know, so we both approach it differently. So I'm a work in Photoshop totally different from the way he works in Photoshop. So we have our different shortcuts.
Well, let's start with you on how you came into photography. I mean, you've been producing and teaching art
forever. I mean, I have a BS in art education and an MFA in painting and printmaking, and so I've been teaching or working in the education field my entire career. So I taught for 25 years online, fine art survey for Louisiana School for Math, Science, and the Arts.
And when did you shift to photography as an art form as opposed to a documentary form?
It was pretty much in 2010. We had switched to doing Blackboard for my job, and I was basically on the computer 8 to 10 hours a day. And I was having a hard time there were 3 days I would typically drive up to LSMSA to Natchitoches, and then 2 days I would work from home. And so if I got my paints all set up and then the computer dinged and I had to get involved in students, answering students' questions and getting into 3 hours later, I'd come back, my paints were dry. So it was becoming a real problem having enough time to paint. And so Michael gave me his old Canon Rebel, and I just sort of took off from there. And then he gave me his license to CS5 on my computer, and then that was history.
Yeah, because Photoshop doesn't dry out, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I was used to photo editing with Corel PaintShop Pro, which I'd used for work. So it wasn't the same sort of setup. Adobe Photoshop's different, but I could learn it pretty quickly.
Okay. Well, Michael, when you gave her the camera, you obviously had shifted on to a different camera.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And so it was a hand-me-down. In doing that, was it an idea to bring her into the photographic world?
Not really, because she had been going out with me when I was photographing and just bringing a point and shoot to take shots of for her paintings for reference. And so I was surprised that she started doing photography.
Well, let me break for just a second and tell everybody to really go look at the betterpicture.org to see what we're talking about, because these are not photographs that you see in the wild. These are photographs from a pure artist's expression, and we're about to get into how we use the camera as a brush. So go look at thebetterpicture.org, and it also has a link to both Leslie's webpage and to Michael's webpage, which, much like the studio setup, you each maintain separate webpages.
Right.
We do.
So y'all are artists living together, but you are...
We even have separate printers.
Yes, we have separate printers, separate computers, separate everything.
Well, that's great. Another call, we have a call in from Ray, calling from Washington, D.C. Thank you for the internet. Ray?
Michael and Leslie, my name is Ray. I'm calling from Washington, D.C. I've spent the last 20 or 30 minutes scrolling through the images that are up on the website. Fascinating, interesting, intriguing, and I'm so glad y'all have shared some of that with us. I'm curious, being Central Louisiana residents, if there are influences in your work. I'm sort of familiar with that part of the country, too. Are there Central Louisiana landscape influences in some of these images or others in your work?
Michael?
Yes. Inglewood Plantation is only like 5 minutes from my house, and anytime I see a really nice cloud formation, I grab my cameras and head that way, especially my infrared camera, and those clouds show up in a lot of my images. And then I just drive around the area. I have a car. I think that's on there, the old car from LeCount at Lee's restaurant. So, yeah. Yes, there are definitely images from Central Louisiana in my work.
You shoot where you live, Leslie.
Right.
There's animals and plants and actually my backyard. And we do go down to Inglewood and down into that area around LeCount quite a bit because the landscape is there. And then I was driving to Natchitoches every 3 days for a long time, and so I would actually leave at 6 a.m. and you know from driving from Shreveport to Alexandria that the interstate has some wonderful spots to pull off,
right?
And I would pull off in the morning, I'd pull off in the evening when I was coming back at 5:30 at night, because the light would be totally different. And so Those shots come from there, and then we, of course, I'm from New Orleans originally, so we go down there a lot, and we have children in Baton Rouge, and we go down there a lot.
You got a lot to work with across the state there, don't you?
Right, and the work we do, you don't have to travel the world to create these images, what I call is constructed realities.
And, if writers write what they know, you shoot what you know. I mean, right. If you see the cloud formation. Well, Ray, great question. We appreciate the call in on that. Leslie, I'm intrigued by the fact that with this long history of art and so many different genres and mediums, what do those have the biggest influence on you now that you've focused on photography?
Well, that's hard to say. My degree is in printmaking, and I was a painter before that, and I did painting also when I was in graduate school. But the printmaking, you had to have layers. You had to register the image. I did color lithography, so I did a lot of different layers of colors. And this is very similar to what I'm doing in Adobe. I'm taking the images, I'm layering them, I'm changing the transparency of them and the density so that you can see certain things through other parts. And it's very similar to doing printmaking. It's also very similar to the way I paint. When I painted, I did lots and lots of layers.
Well, to you, is the camera just a paintbrush?
It is. When I look, I might have I always have a background image that's going to be something that is a straight background shot. And then I'm going to layer things on top of that. And as I'm developing the idea, I might come up with an idea to start off with, and then I go searching through my files of images to find what I want to put that together. And sometimes I'm searching through my files of images and suddenly something goes, okay, I'm going to use that as a background. I'm using that as something to come on top of it. And then the story starts to build. So it's a constant questioning of what you're doing. You answer a million questions as an artist, and you make a decision constantly. What's the color? What's the imagery? What's the proportion? What's the density going to be? Where are you going to place it? How's the composition going to be built?
So if you are constructing this piece of art with photographic images, and you need a leaf, and you don't have the leaf.
I go outside and I take a photograph of a leaf.
So you go mix your own paint, basically.
That's it,
what
yes.
You're doing with that. Well, that is an interesting approach. Most of us take pictures and generate them more quickly than you would do. For one of the images that you have, what's a typical process for you to produce a photograph?
It all depends on the image. I mean, some come very, it's very much like doing any painting or drawing or anything else. Sometimes it comes very quickly, and I might finish an image in 3 days, and that's 3 8-hour days of sitting there at the computer doing a lot of work on it.
And that's quick.
And that's quick. Yeah. But other ones might take me a month, 6 weeks. I might have 20 versions of the same idea, and it's just not there yet. And so I'll try a different version and a different version and a different version. And
how do you know when it's done?
You know, every artist will tell you they know when it's done, when it's done. You just walk in and you go, it's done. It's an intuitive thing. And you get a certain elation about when you've finished a piece. You know, it's there. You know it's finished. You know it's working visually. You know, every element's saying what you want it to say, and you declare it done. But as since we print our own pieces, the next step is to make sure that it prints exactly the way you have it on your screen. And that's a whole nother technical issue of dealing with your printer.
Right.
And the paper you choose and what you're doing with it.
Well, we are going to shift over to talk about Michael's process, but now's the time on our hour to do our smartphone minute. Our guests are Leslie and Michael Elliott Smith. Remember, if you have a question for Michael or Leslie or about photography in general, call 800-552-8502. On the smartphone minute today, I'm going to talk about the panoramic features, one of the underutilized features on most smartphones. What's really happening when you take a panorama is the phone is taking a series of still photographs that it then stitches together into one image. The trick is to make a smooth line across the image. To do this, you have to keep the camera level as you move. Make a mental mark on the camera, where's the horizon, where's the lake shore on your viewfinder, and as you pan around, make sure that line stays in the same place. Some people brace their elbows against their body and swivel the whole body. Some extend their arms into locked positions and do the same. And others just hold real still and gently swivel the camera. Practice different ways. See what works best for you. It's really pretty simple to get the hang of it. And you can touch a screen to set the focus and light settings for the whole image. If you're going to do a sunset, and sunsets are beautiful when they're done in the panorama, especially if you have some of the big cloud structures that Michael was talking about, pick a point that's close to the sun to set your exposure by just tapping on the screen right there, but not on the sun. If you do that, it makes everything too dark. And then make the zoom around the side and get the picture. Once you get the picture, you can always crop out outside edges and different parts. You can make the panorama as long or short as you want. So practice going long, be ready to get some great shots. If you have questions, the number again is 800-552-8502. Now, Michael, you pack a lot of your images into your images without covering the horizon. I mean, but your current works like several images combined. Before we jump into that, we have a question.
Sure, Ross. A double question
okay. From
someone who didn't want to go on the air. The first question is about the printers that you use what type of printer specifically, and also how do you keep them in calibration for accurate reproduction? And the other one is whether or not you teach classes in advanced Photoshop. So a double question.
Okay, Michael, we'll start with you on the printer because I just say you all have separate printers.
Right. I have an Epson 4800. It's a wide format 17-inch printer, and I'm using Epson Ultra Smooth Fine Art Paper. It comes in 50-foot rolls. Mine's getting some age on it. It's about 10 years old now. It's the first thing I bought when I moved into digital. And as far as calibration, it's really not a whole lot. You can calibrate your screen. I do have a spider for that. And that's about it.
You use the software, the Epson drivers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, for the paper. Right.
And Leslie, what do you print with?
I have a Canon Pro 9000 Mark II, which Michael gave me free from buying a camera.
She gets a lot of stuff free.
So I can print a 14-inch sheet of paper on that. And I was using, and I still do use, the Ultra Smooth Epson fine art paper, and we buy it in a big roll, and I cut it into sheets because mine's a sheet feed, and I'll flatten them out. But I've used other papers too. And basically, what I do is I do test prints on small pieces of paper, like 5x7, because I can do that on my printer, to check and see what I'm seeing on the screen is what's going to print, and then I'll play with it a little bit if it's not coming out exactly right from what I want it to be.
You do not calibrate your screen, you just work...
I actually don't calibrate my screen because I've gotten used to what my screen shows me.
Oh.
And so color-wise, being an artist, I can see the colors. So I'm pretty darn close every single time, and occasionally I do have the papers in my, you know, I can pick a paper to print on, but sometimes it works better for Photoshop to be the color source, and sometimes it works better for the printer to be the color source.
So
it
yours
all depends.
Is just trial and error until you get up to the last.
It is.
Okay. And second part of the question, I know y'all have both retired from the instruction world. Are y'all teaching any courses?
No.
No, and you know, I taught online forever and made my own course in Fine Arts Survey, which was a massive amount of work. So
where do you go to learn about Photoshop if you're not going to teach it with the audiences out there?
Okay, I will say lynda.com. Now, there's tons of stuff that's free on the Internet that you can learn from. But if you want someplace consistent that you can go to and learn the most recent information and even go back to, like, I'm still using CS5. So if I want to go back to CS5, lynda.com, lynda.com, you can get a subscription for a year fairly inexpensively, and it has everything you'd ever want to know about most cameras and most Photoshop or Corel Paint or PaintShop Pro or any of those elements or Lightroom or...
Well, Michael, when you started with film.
Right.
I mean, let's back up. When did you start art photography?
Probably about 1980, when I finally realized I'm getting more advanced with the black and white at a small dark room in my apartment, and experimented. Built little objects to make forced perspective. Put my camera on a tripod, aimed out the window at night, and do long exposure to cars going down the street and get these streaks and just things that I could just come up with to just keep pushing it.
So from the very beginning, then, you've been working with not just recording what the eye sees, but what the camera can do.
Right.
We have another question in. This one is in from Melanie in Alexandria. Melanie, you're on the air.
Hey, Ross, I have a question for Michael and Leslie.
Okay.
I wish they could just discuss a little bit some of the images they have in the sampler that's on your website, especially the first one that shows, I think it's Michael's, of the seashore overlaid with another photograph on top of it, and just sort of discuss what he's thinking and what they're thinking with some of their images when they created them.
That's a very good question. And a hard one to answer. Actually, the floating object came from the very first surreal image I made, which was the reflecting pool, which actually Ross owns. And I loved that piece, and a few years later extracted that pool out. And we had just come back from Navarre Beach and shot a lot of gulls, shot the ocean waves coming in. And I was just playing and set this in and thought it looked great hovering over here with part of the waves breaking over it. And then put some more birds coming in. And what I was thinking, it's really, really hard to describe, really hard to say why I did it.
Like Leslie had said, sometimes it gets to a point and you go, there it is.
There it is, right.
Leslie...
You know, I don't remember which ones I put on the website. If she could say a specific, you know, image, I'll talk about it.
Well, I'll prompt it along because I do remember most of them, and I'll try to pull it up here. All of your pictures seem to have water in them. Is that a conscious effort?
a lot of them do have water in them. And, you know, I'm from New Orleans. We were surrounded by water. The levee was only a little bit of, like a quarter mile from my house. And there's Pontchartrain Lake and then the swamp on one end. And I always look at water as this cathartic transference of life and also this cleansing idea. And so it ends up in a lot of my work. And sometimes that's what it means, and sometimes it means just a transition to something else.
Melanie, great question. You've kind of gotten them trying to describe how their thought processes go. Like Michael said, I have one of the pictures. In fact, it's the first photograph I bought was reflecting pools, and I'm still trying to figure out what he was thinking. Appreciate the call. We have another call coming in from one of our former guests, Neil Johnson. Neil, you're on the air.
Howdy do. I have to thank Ross for introducing your listeners to these two wonderful, wonderful artists. I've got to say that first.
Well, you're more than welcome.
Good job, Ross. And my question is two words. Jerry Uelsman, one of my heroes.
Right.
Can you tell me any influence at all on that gentleman?
Huge.
Everybody. Before you answer that, I just say it's hard to illustrate a person's dreams, but you all do that, and congratulations. And I'll drop out and listen to your answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, back probably 1980 or so, I saw a story about him in Public Photography, and it just blew me away. I cannot believe someone was making these type of images in the darkroom. And once I had the power to do things like that, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to make these kind of images. And actually, Leslie and I got to have lunch with him and his wife in 2002 or three.
Right.
I can't remember. And that was quite an experience.
And what's really amazing about his work is that it was done before anybody dreamed of Photoshop.
Right.
To do that.
Right.
And for the transition to move on to that is amazing. Now, of course, Michael, you went kind of in the surreal. You went to infrared fairly early in your career.
Right.
Which to me is kind of like talking about pictures on the radio. You're taking pictures with invisible light.
Exactly.
How does that work? How do you see what's going to come out with light that you can't see?
Experience. A lot of experience. But once I was shooting medium format infrared, which is Konica infrared, and I shot enough that I really was comfortable with it. I could put my camera on a tripod, focus it. I knew what exposures I needed. I pretty much knew what I was going to get. And the exposures aren't, even though it's light that we don't see, it's not unreal exposures that we would do even with visible light onto the film. The film, of course, is made for infrared.
Right, when it's designed. Now, you, one of the questions I always go in with my guest is, how did you transition from film to digital? And in your case, you had film that was made for infrared.
Right. Right. Came to a crossroads in 2005. Digital was having such a huge impact on the film market. Konica stopped making infrared film. Kodak stopped making darkroom paper. And I was also using a Forte paper that comes out of Hungary. They stopped making it. It was just the market was shrinking. 2004, I had received the Louisiana Division of the Arts Fellowship. So that was $5,000. I didn't see any reason staying in film. That was just not working for me. It was over for me as far as infrared. So that's when I went into digital.
But going into digital originally, as I remember back then, they didn't do infrared real well. I mean, what?
Right, what happened? 2 years after, 2007, I read that there's a company in Washington State that could convert your camera to infrared.
Digital camera.
Right, digital camera, infrared. Most, if not all, digital cameras can record infrared. The manufacturer puts a filter over the sensor to block infrared and only allow visible light through. So the technician will open the camera, remove the filter, put a filter on that blocks visible light and allows infrared through. So I have a dedicated infrared camera.
But in the interim, you had to work in a field foreign to you.
Oh, yeah.
At that point.
Right, right.
So the technology at that point limited what you knew. But by the same token, technology gave you Photoshop, which has right. turned you loose.
But, yeah, right when I got in digital, Photoshop was a bear to learn. It was a struggle.
And how long did it take you to get to what you considered proficient?
A friend told me about a little company called Eclectic Academy, and they had like six lessons, and one was about masking and layering, and that is what I needed to get over the hump, start beginning to do layered images.
So you had 2 or 3 years of visions bottled up in your head right. that you got to let out. For my listeners to understand, when Michael refers to the Louisiana State Arts Council Visual Arts Fellowship, Leslie also won the same fellowship. Yours was when, Leslie?
1994.
Right. So I did some research. I can't find another couple, married couple, that have both won that award. That speaks volumes for what y'all had done with that. Getting back to your infrared work for a second, when you started off, when I first knew you as a photographer back in the 80s, the contrast is so strong.
Right.
Are you able to replicate that in the digital?
I can, yeah. Actually, the digital sensor seems to be more contrasty than the infrared film. And it might be that the sensor wasn't really built for infrared. It was built for visible light. So you get more contrast, black skies, whitest foliage, brilliant clouds. And yeah, I love it. We went out west, went to Utah 6 months ago, and I shot, I don't know, 3,000 images in infrared and maybe 200 in visible light.
Well, you know, you both made references to these images that you have. Leslie, you had talked about this category. You just have these things like, if I need a bird, I know which birds I have in my files. When you go out traveling together, do you shoot the same things? I'm intrigued by the fact that you are both so accomplished, both award winners, most prestigious award of Louisiana, and you're in a car together somewhere out in the West. I mean, is it like, come over, you got to see this, or?
Yeah.
Actually, it's stop the car. I see something. Or he says, stop the car. You know, we were both driving because we did a 1,200 miles in 7 days.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was a lot. We rented a car and drove all the way around in Utah. But, we might be in the same place and we're looking at two totally different things. We always have our cell phones on us because we might walk different directions and get away from each other when we're shooting and have to find out.
Do you ever look at the same thing and see it very differently?
Sometimes.
I mean, you come back with an image of a tree that you do very different things with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Michael will push his into...
Well, he's typically doing infrared and I'm doing color, so it is different in the way that my image would look as opposed to his.
But even the... In your work that you do, your palette is not always pure natural.
No.
I mean, you...
I might change it.
Yeah, you...
You know, I'm going to paint on it. I'm going to put some layers, some fill layers in it. I'm going to do some transparencies. I'm going to do some changing of it. And of course, Michael keeps passing equipment down to me, so I actually do have a 7D that's an infrared camera that he gave me. And occasionally I'll use it. I don't see things the way he sees them with infrared, so that's where we totally separate.
For our listeners, Neil Johnson had made a reference to Jerry Ulsman, who is married to an artist as well, Maggie Taylor. For those of you with access to a computer, go back and look at both of their works and then look at Michael and Leslie's, and it's just staggering, the similarities of what the four of y'all see and what you bring to us, and I don't know if it's a male-female thing, but it's something of great interest that we can do. One of the things that we as the viewing public don't understand is when you get into shows, I mean, y'all are both supporting yourselves as artists. You're relying on people to say, I will pay for the vision you've created, which is impressive. How do you get it out there? You can't walk into a gallery and say, here, hang my stuff up.
Well, for me, I mean, I actually do have a gallery in New Orleans, Lemieux, that galleries that handles my work and has for years handled my work. But before that, and I had a gallery before that, and I had a gallery before that, but prior to that, you would enter juried shows, and now that's a little easier to do because there are a lot of online services like CAFE, which is Call for... I can't remember what it stands for.
CAFE entry, but yeah.
Remember, y'all are playing in a world that a lot of the public isn't. What's right. A juried show?
Okay. A juried show is when you actually pay a fee, you submit 2 to 4 works, depends on what the show is requesting, and then a juror or jurors are tasked with looking at all the artwork that was submitted and picking what's going to go into the exhibition. And if you're accepted in the exhibition, then you have to frame your work and ship it off to the exhibit. And we don't enter shows that do not have awards money, but there are some that you could enter that don't give you any award money, but I'm not sure why you would want to do that. So we enter shows to get the award money and or to sell the work from the show. And get it out there. And so these are national shows. Some are international shows. Your competition can be massive. There's some very prestigious shows like the Texas National where we met Jerry Ulsman and Maggie Taylor. They were the jurors of the show, and they accepted my work, and so we got to go to lunch with them when they came to do their talk at the university there.
Michael, what was your first juried show?
The Tom Payton Memorial Arts Festival in Alexandria. And Leslie is, I just started dating Leslie. She saw my work, encouraged me to enter. I didn't even know what a juried show was. And she gave me a little lecture, don't be upset if you're rejected. Well, I got in. That was 144 shows ago.
Well, that one of the other things for the public information, together, they've been in about 250 combined jury shows, which gives you a little idea that it's not just the neighbors that like them, that everybody really... What's the farthest away show you've had, Leslie?
Hilo, Hawaii.
Ah, and Michael?
Redding, California.
So it really is a countrywide, nationwide endeavor to do. Now, when you were working, and Leslie, you had made reference to sometimes you'll see something and make a comment. Even though you have different styles, 20, 30 years together, you have to have great influences on each other. Is there any competition, any competitive edge with y'all in the art world?
Oh, to a certain extent. I mean, it's kind of jovial, but I mean, I got in a show today, got noticed that I was accepted to a show in Newport News, Virginia. Today, and Michael...
I have not heard.
Michael hasn't got his notice yet.
But, you know, last week he got 2 pieces in a show. I did not get in. I got rejected from, so...
Well, that is... but it's still an entree into having your art exhibited. If we have photographers out there that have pictures they like and they do other stuff, Michael, any advice you'd give to the photographer that says... Let me put up a piece of my work and see what happens.
We were talking about that earlier, and I think Leslie had a good point. Is it unique? Is it something that you've seen before, or is it be your own self best critic? And then, if you really think it's good, find a juried show that's local and try to enter it.
We have a lot in Louisiana. We have a course, Tom Peyton in Alexandria, which is, believe it or not, that show is 50th year this year. They have wonderful award monies, and most people that go to that show purchase work. So it's really a good venue, especially for somebody who hasn't entered that many shows before or hasn't entered any shows before, because it's local enough that you can get the work to it and not have to worry about shipping it. Shipping work becomes a big problem, so because it has to be framed, it has to be in plexiglass, you have to make sure that it meets quality standards in the way that you're framing it.
Well, that, and I think the critique idea that y'all both referenced is excellent. We all like our own pictures, but what stands out, what makes it a Leslie or a Michael or a Neil Johnson or one of the others that somebody else will look at and say,
all right,
that's worth having. When you're doing a photograph, Leslie, or art image, are you working from what you want to put in, what story you want to tell, or are you trying to create something that the viewer will have a reaction, even a different reaction from you?
I mean, most artists create their work with some idea, and mine is all narrative, and so is Michael's. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a story to tell, and we're trying to tell a story, and so, you know, when you read the title of my piece, if you don't know what the word means, go look it up, because I do tend to, when I title pieces, go into the dictionary and start pulling words out so that I can get the right word for what I want to say. But I expect the viewer to bring their own personal ideas to the piece. I hope it's universal enough and vague enough that they can get something out of it without me having to tell them exactly what they're supposed to think about the piece.
Michael, let me break in again. Numbers 800-552-8502. We have about 10 minutes left if you have questions for these wonderful artists we have here. Michael, when Leslie had talked about, she knows when the picture is done, and I've seen some progressions in work with yours. The reflecting pools that I bought, right, from you. When I saw the beach scene that Melanie had referenced, it was kind of like, that's part of my picture.
Yeah. Right.
Do yours develop? Have you exhibited pictures that you later tweak and work on?
Really only one. Especially if it sells, I'm not going to tweak it. Unless if I do, I'm going to change the title. When I print it and frame it, then I got to hang it on the wall, or see it in a show and look at it, and I may go, this needs more evolution to it. It's got to evolve. And sometimes when you think it's done, it really isn't. And when Leslie says, she knows when it's done, and some of mine are. When I finished one recently, one of my daughters in it called Megan Visits the Sanctuary, when I finished it, that was it. I knew it was over. So each one is different. Each one is your creation, and it's your determinant when it's done.
So you get to use some of the same images, but even some of the same story that you're telling, to pick up Leslie's terms.
Right.
You'll decide it needs another verse later and add something else to it.
Right.
Well, that is great. One of the things that I found interesting, not only are you both award winners with that, and the resume, go to their web pages and look at the list of awards and things. One, I don't have to, like, I spent an hour talking about all the things y'all won in the different shows, but you did have a joint show, which I think is pretty neat. I mean, it was in Lake Charles, in the same facility that I think David Hockney was showing in.
Yeah, he was on the second floor, and we were on the third floor.
So it's at the same time. Tell us that story about what it's like for the two of you. How long did it take to get involved? What's it like to – how big of a rush is it to get something like that accomplished?
Well, that was a two-person show, and that was a facility that requested that you make a proposal for an exhibition. So we made the proposal about a year and a half before the show, and it took a good 6 months before we ever heard back from them. That was the Lake Charles Historical Art Center, which is their old city hall, and it's a beautiful building. And so we were given the entire top floor, which was the old city chambers where they would have all their meetings, and it was massive. And so we had 55 works of art to fill that space, and it was nice. We had an opening. The mayor came. We did a little talk, and
as we came down the street to the opening, there was a 3-story banner with their name and one of Leslie's images on it, and that was pretty cool.
Well, that is. And how long did the show run?
It ran for six weeks. 6 weeks. It was up, and we sold quite a bit of work out of it, so that was nice too.
So when I walk into an opening, a show, one artist or a couple or whatever, I mean, I see it on the side of the street, stop and walk in. There's a couple of years' work invested for me to be able to walk in and just see this. And 55 works, that sounds like a whole lot.
That is. We had to enlist our daughter to put the last box. I couldn't fit them all in my car, in my CRV, to get all the framed work in. She came and helped us hang it. So that was a lot of work. I mean, it was a lot of framing, too.
And it's expensive, the framing and mat boards, and it's all expensive.
And you do all of that
ourselves.
Actually, yeah. I mean, again, coming from an art background, I taught how to frame work at the museum when I was there. So we use a rag mat board and make sure everything's archival, and we cut our own mats, and we assemble our frames and make sure everything is the way it should be.
Well, I can remember back in early photographic days in Alexandria when we put on one of our shows, Leslie, you came to us and said, well, those are really good works. Why don't you mat them properly? Because, I mean, most of us didn't understand that the presentation enhances and does a lot to how you present that particular work that you do. Leslie had talked about some of her, ideas and telling the story. What is your approach when you get into starting a work? What triggers it? Is it an image comes by, you see something on the road?
Well, sometimes it comes in the middle of the night, which I actually did last night. I'm thinking about my images, and it flips through my head like a Rolodex. I can just see them and which ones will fit together. So I had an idea during the middle of the night. I got up and actually wrote it down. And sometimes I'm just find an interesting image and just start playing with it and adding some more images to it and start building it and have no idea where it's going.
It's an interactive work.
Right.
One thing we do have to say, though, is, not every image you start gets to be finished.
No, I've got...
I have file folders full of unfinished pieces that aren't quite working out. I'm not sure they'll ever work out. I haven't thrown them away or destroyed them because I say, well, there might be something there. I just need to think about it more. But
Kermit's over here laughing like he has some sonatas somewhere in a file folder that that haven't quite been completed yet. So, and that's do you ever give up and just say that's not going to work?
Yep.
Occasionally, yeah, I'll go through and cull and go, delete. I'm ready to delete it. I'm ready to say no.
And how many can you keep working at the same time? Your images are very intricate, Leslie. I mean, they've got.
15, 20 layers.
Yeah.
I generally work it on one at one time, but sometimes I'll have three up in Adobe at the same time, going back and forth between them. It just depends on what's influencing me at that moment, And you work in spurts. I mean, yes, we went out to Utah, and I took 2,000 photographs when we were in Utah. I loved the trip. And I know that I'll use any of them in my work because they're all great landscape shots, but it's not what I do. So, I'll go back through and look at my file folders and see what stands out. And you never know what it's going to be that's going to really key you in. The only shot I've used from Utah is actually my most recent piece, and it was a raven that had flown off the cliff and come to get some water out of a little bowl of rock that had formed a little dish for them to get water. And he just sat there and kind of posed for me while I sat there and shot him one morning while we're sitting there in Canyonlands, and Michael's off shooting other things. And that actually ended up in my latest piece.
Are there times when you're on those trips that I refer to and Neil referred to, you know, the muse gets on you and says, you're not done with this tree yet. And Michael, you may be fighting a tree or waiting for a cloud or seeing pieces come together. And in the moment, Leslie, you may have had your moment and ready to move on.
We're patient. We wait. Right. Because we both know that it's happened. He's been finished and I'm not, or I've been finished and he's not. So you just go find something else to do.
In the technical skills that it takes, I mean, you create these wonderful images. You can't make a good gumbo without good ingredients, okay? And how have you studied on the technical side and to work out to get that image like you just want? The raven. I mean, we could all see the raven and say, that'd be great in a picture.
Actually, yeah. Well, for me, it's visual, and I'm sitting there going, okay, I want him walking. Let me wait until he walks. And, I've got a 5D, a Canon 5D Mark II, so I can take lots of shots very fast and get motion. And so I wanted this bird in motion. And so I was patiently waiting for him to leave the water bowl and walk around.
Well, this is a photography show, and like I said at the outset, y'all have taken the concept of photography to new levels, but you still have to get the exposure. So let me just ask some practical questions. You shoot in a manual mode? You shoot, what? How do you have your camera set up? Michael,
I have mine set on speed, on shutter speed. One reason is that I have a little shake, so I'm trying to cut that out. And I'm shooting with a 18 to 35 millimeter lens on the IR camera, so I'm going wide.
Now, infrared normally takes longer exposures, doesn't it?
Not really. I don't know if they set the exposure. It's really normal exposure. The meter reads it just like it would visible light.
And is it, I mean, like an ISO of 400, 200?
Oh, I usually shoot at 100.
Shoot at 100.
Right.
Okay. And so to you, crispness is more important than depth of field? I mean, if you're going speed-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm usually shooting at 18 millimeters, so wide open. The lens.
And Leslie?
I do usually shoot with just the speed, but sometimes I'll do it for the depth of field too. It just depends on what the image is. You know, if I'm thinking of a background image and I want a long road with a lot of trees in very detailed focus, I'm going to deal with the depth of field and not so much with setting it on aperture. I never set it on automatic, and I do rarely do it on manual.
And when you take the picture of the raven drinking out of the natural bowl, in your mind's eye, are you going to cut that out and use that raven somewhere else?
Yeah. I mean, it was not a shot that you would ever want to use. There was just nothing there to want to use for just a regular shot of a raven. So
we have another Texas question coming in. Judas Priest from, is it Gilmer, Texas?
Yes.
You're on the air?
Yes.
What's your question?
Hello?
Yeah, what's your question?
I'm trying to find out about this. I got several small cameras, digital type cameras. Can I convert that to an infrared?
You've already done that?
No, I'm going to. I'd like to, but can it be done on a regular camera?
They will convert compact cameras all the way up to full frame. What you need to do is go to the one that did my conversion is a place called Life Pixel, L-I-F-E Pixel. And Life Pixel, and they have a list of cameras they can convert.
Yeah. So, go to the Life Pixels website and see if one of your cameras is listed.
Right, and if anybody's interested in conversion, they have lots of information.
Okay, good. And that's Life, L-I-F-E?
Right.
Pixels, P-I-X-E-L-S dot com?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's no S at the end. But.
Okay, P-I-X-E-L-S?
No S.
No S.
Life Pixel.
Pixel.com?
Dot com.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you for the question, and good luck with it. When you get some of it done, send me a copy of your first infrared picture to thebetterpicture.org, and we'll talk about it. And once you get up and get your first juried show, call me. We may need another guest. Appreciate the call. Thanks. Well, if we can spark somebody's interest to go looking outside of the normal, that is great. Most photographers are more interested in capturing the image than creating the image. And so we really appreciate the fact that there are those of you out there that see things we don't, put them onto a paper where we can see them, and then get the intrigue and the rest of it that goes with that. So that is a great thing to do. When you go into a show, I'm a viewer that goes into a show and the artist is there. What is your take on walking up to the artist to discuss the question? I'm usually a little intimidated by a person that creates something that the public comes to see. How do I approach you in a show?
Well, I love for people to come up and talk to me about the work. I mean, like Charles was a really good example of that. I mean, it was a large opening, and they had done a lot of advertisements. So almost everybody that came in the show talked to us individually about our work and would ask us questions about, you know, the imagery and what we were trying to say. And I'm not afraid to tell you exactly where I took that image and how I put it together, you know.
Actually, I've seen people looking at my image and pointing things out, I will go up and start talking to them. And then they'll interact with me.
Yeah. Well, that's great to know. Right. And is it rude to ask an artist, how did you do that? Where did you have it set? The mechanical stuff?
I don't find it rude at all.
I don't mind.
Yeah. I mean, there's nobody that I know that I have ever met that could take one of your ideas and copy what you do. I mean, it's that...
Right. We love to share what we're doing and tell people how to do it, because they're going to use their own ideas if they can do it.
Well, that is great. Well, it has been an absolute treat having you here. I do not have the exact websites for both of you. You keep two separate websites, but go to thebetterpicture.org, and we have the links to Leslie and Michael's website there that you can go to look at. Thank you all for coming, making the trip up. Thanks to Kermit, to Renee, to Wally, to Tim Snell, to the whole of the crew that we have here at Red River Radio. We've just finished up a fun drive that the crew was good enough to recognize with the flooding we had up here. They're tuned into their community, and they cut the drive off early. But you know what? If you're tuned into this show, you can still send money. They'll still take it. So we appreciate the efforts that they have had. We will announce when we're having our next show next time. And remember, get close, stay focused, and keep shooting.